So, what's your favorite Girl Scout cookie then?
Me?
My favorite Girl Scout cookies?
Yeah, anybody. Favorite Girl Scout cookie.
I really like
So
just
I'm.
the plain ones. Just the absolute plain ones.
What's the plain one? I've never heard of a plain one.
It just looks like a little butter cookie.
Like a sugar cookie? Just, yeah, like, I know what you're talking about, Chuck.
It's just a little butter cookie. There's, I mean, Thin Mints and I don't know, what are the ones where they put caramel and
Samoas.
coconut?
The
Yeah.
Samoa. The
Samoa.
Samoa is, in my opinion, and I don't want to sway Phil here, but that's the Cadillac of the Girl Scout cookie. That's the greatest Girl Scout cookie. I mean, get rid of the rest. Keep the Samoa.
My
No.
favorite Girl Scout cookie is all of them.
All of them. All of them.
Whatever,
Trefoil.
box the
The
girl has in her
trefoils.
hand.
The trefoils. Light. Here, I pulled it up. They're light and delicious. Delicate tasting shortbread that is delightfully simple and satisfying. That's you to a T, Chuck.
See, I'm delightfully simple.
You are. You are. Yet
Yeah.
satisfying.
Yes.
I'm, let's see, a Samoa. So tender vanilla cookies covered with caramel, rolled in oats, coconut, and are stripped with a rich chocolatey coating. Obviously,
I think that's
hey.
striped.
Yeah, it is. It is with a little chocolate bit on the bottom. I mean, put everything you got on it, and that's what I want.
Yeah, but that gets like stuck in your teeth, and I
That's why you have
don't know.
toothpicks.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about that. So, what are you kids up to? You're recovering from a hunt, right, Phil?
Yeah, I'm actually, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I said, it's the toughest country I've ever hunted, hands down. But other than, feeling like I had a couple hot spots coming down the mountain from my boots, physically I felt fine. I mean, I still feel fine now. We happened to open up my new shop here a week ago yesterday, and I have a lot of things we need to get ironed out here before I can get back up there. But I'm planning on going back up Wednesday for another 5 days and trying to make it happen, because from start to finish we were, opening day we were in Rams, and then we got rain. We were in camp by 4 o'clock opening day. We couldn't leave camp the next morning until it was, I don't know, it was 8 o'clock, 8:30. It rain didn't break for 12, 13 hours. And then we got up and got into them again, got in front of them. That's when I actually got a shot, was the second day. Hail, rain, hail, rain. We were back in camp again that day by 9 o'clock. And I mean, it was unforgiving is one word I guess that you can use for it, for the country and just the weather. But I'm excited to get back up there. I mean, it's addicting. I've never sheep hunted, but I know a lot of people talk about sheep hunting being the pinnacle kind of Western hunting.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, it's because how daunting the terrain is and how unforgiving the terrain is. And those animals, they just live, man. I mean, you're half a step away from death one way or another, when you're up on those cliffs.
Yeah, and they're in it every day. Now,
Yeah.
what were the misses? You were struggling with cutting yards or what?
Yeah, so I've got the Leupold 1000i, I think, with the TBR, the total ballistic range. Really good
Yeah,
range
yeah.
finder. I know a lot of the 3D guys use it because it picks up color, brown, white, black. It doesn't matter from a 3D target. It picks up color very well. So, and I had a cut chart. Yeah, that's the one. That's the one, Will. I've got a cut chart that, my range finder, I have it in bow mode, and at certain distances, it bounces back and forth from line of sight to bow mode. And I think it's at its further distances. I don't know if it's around 100 yards, but long story short, the shot that I missed on that the ram that second day that was the better of the rams that we got into, it was on a 42 degree downhill slope,
Wow,
and
dude.
it was a long shot. Let's just say it was a long shot, and I needed to cut somewhere between 3 and 4 additional yards off what the BOMO showed. Because it's like you know, and I know Tim on Facebook alluded to it, and I've talked to Tim in the past about it. But he's got a whole chart printed out from, you know, you use that same rangefinder in bow mode, and it shows you how much additional you need to cut on your certain downhill angled shots at certain distances. And kind of looking over at his cheat sheet, it's that, I mean, I shot a foot and a half over his back. And, you know, at a further distance, you know, that's 3, maybe 4 yards, you know. I don't want to talk about yardage because I don't want to get into a whole ethical situation of hunting. But, you know, for people to ram hunt with a bow or sheep hunt with a bow, and, you know, the angles and just the terrain and the distance of what you're going to get into, you need to be comfortable walking out on that ledge that is a very slippery slope in the people's eyes as far as what's ethical and what's not ethical. Because if you want to play the hunting game in cheap country and live in that 40 yard and in standard, you're never going to kill anything.
Yeah, but I was just going to say, I mean, that stuff just doesn't happen out there. I mean, you know, when you start talking like back east here, you know, in New York State, the average deer harvest is 18 yards. And, you know, we're not hunting big game other than whitetails. So, you know, I think there's a point when you say, look, an ethical shot varies from terrain and game and archer. So, you know, one guy who can't hit the broadside of a barn from the inside, an ethical shot for him might be 15 yards and that's it.
Yep.
You know, but a guy who's trained and practiced and put in the time, an ethical shot might be 50 or 60 yards. But it all depends, in my opinion, you know, that whole ethical standard thing, you can't just throw a blanket number at it and call it good. There's too many variables.
That's exactly right. And that's where, you know, with me, it was, you know, part of my preparation, even though I've been extremely busy with, you know, trying to get our new shop up, and I still physically, I get up and work out, you know, 4 or 5, sometimes 6 times a week. And after that, you know, I was shooting anywhere between, sometimes I just go out and shoot a dozen arrows, and sometimes I'd shoot 40 arrows, but I was shooting from, you know, 80 to 110 yards. You know, I spent very little time practicing under 60 yards, and not that I want to go out and shoot a ram at 110 yards, but I need to know that my bow is dialed in from its closest to its longest yardage that I can set my sight to, and then work in from there from what's comfortable.
If you're comfortable at 110, you're going to be comfortable at 50. There's no two ways about it. So
right, and that, and that's what I believe too, is practice for the extremes, and hopefully you can get in, you know, in your 50 to 70% range of what you're practicing at, and play the game. But it's just, I tell you, Chuck, it was, I mean, there was points where we were watching these sheep feed up these cliffs and these ridges, and you don't see them for a little while because they're in these little, there's these little cutouts and little benches that you can't look over the edge and look straight down and see them. It's not possible. And to think about shooting a shot in a situation like that, I mean, I drew my bow back the first time on that shot, and I had to let down because when I drew my bow back and I bent at the waist as best I can, and then I still have to kind of lean up and over this ledge, I let down because I felt like I was leaning over the edge of this cliff, and I was. So I kind of reset my front knee because I was shooting from a kneeling position. I reset my front knee where I felt like I had a better balance point, or you know, I just steadied myself better. Same thing, drew my bow back. I bent as far as I could with bending at the waist, and I still had to come up and over and lean over that ledge, you know, by what I would guess was that extra 10 degrees worth of slope. I mean, you know, we're taught to shoot, you know, especially like you, Chuck, you can speak this. You shoot a lot of field and you know, the outdoor tournament scene, when you're getting into tough angled shots and they say bend at the waist, keep your form from the waist up as intact as you can. that, yes, to a certain extent will that happen when you're in a hunting situation in these kind of in that terrain. It's just it's not possible to hold perfect form.
No, you get past 40 degrees, man. That's so hard. No, and it's almost impossible to practice for unless you're standing on your roof shooting into your driveway. I mean, it's so hard to practice for. But yeah, you know, you start getting into form at that angle, it's ridiculous. You know, it all just becomes skill at that point. If hopefully you've done it before, and you know, hopefully you've got decent form going in. Otherwise, it's a mess. It's a cluster.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I haven't been able to practice on the angles that I'd like to have leading into that hunt. But at the same time, you know, I try to keep everything in perspective, and I think about it. And it's like, well, there's a lot of guys that go rifle hunting for sheep that don't get close enough. There's a lot of guys that, you know, go rifle hunting and never see animals. So then you talk about us, you know, a couple guys going out bow hunting, and we were into sheep every day. You know, the first day we got into 200 yards and it just started hailing and they moved off. Okay, second day we closed the gap. They were going to feed probably somewhere between 60 and 80 yards from where I was stashed kind of against this rock outcrop. And the lightning and thunder went out, and they went down the hill, and I had to start sneaking in after them on these cliffs. And that's when I got a shot on them. But the third day, I got another stalk in on a group that was actually feeding straight up the hill, of which another, you know, it was just shy of a 40-degree angle straight uphill. And I can, in my opinion, I can shoot better downhill than uphill on those extreme angles. It's just – it's so hard to shoot uphill. And another long shot, and – used a cut chart on that one, and I ended up giving him a haircut on his belly, the ram that I shot at. I mean, I thought that I connected on him, and the guys that were with me were above me in the spotting scope, and they saw the same thing. They seen the ram jump, and I thought, well, that's a hit. Well, as he went up and up over the cliffs, he met up with the rest of the rams, and he took off, and he didn't even have but a, you know, not even a speck of blood. It was just, you can see the tuft of hair right underneath his chest where that arrow had grazed him on that uphill shot.
Damn.
But, yeah, and it was, you know, it is what it is, but I'm disappointed to have missed, but I'm thankful to have gotten to him. And like I said, if we can get into him 3 days in a row and get, you know, within shooting distance 2 out of the 3 days, it's a matter of time, you know. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, you'll get back into them. They'll get back into them.
Yeah. So.
Sounds like a great time.
What's new with Mr. Will Bradley since his coming back from his honeymoon in the Luau state?
Glad you asked, Phil. And welcome, everybody, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my co-host and no longer current reigning train to hunt champion. But he was still the first national champion, so he's got that going for him. You know, and he's still handsome as all get out. Phil Mendoza. And our guest tonight is a pro archer, optician, and all around just an awesome guy, Chuck Cooley.
What's up?
Man, not much is going on. I actually was just going to play around on the Maven Binoculars website. You know, going over different options, figured you and Chuck had this thing wrapped up, and I wouldn't have to say a darn word tonight.
Well, I had seen some posts about the hunt. I kind of wanted to find out what went down. So
yeah, it
was
cool.
I'd like to hear the play-by-play on that. That was awesome.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not – Will knows this. I'm not My options are always open, and I've been writing a lot more, and I even to the extent where I took, you know, I don't want to call it a journal, call it whatever you want to call it, and I've been, you know, every I sit there and I'll write 3 pages as to what went down, because at the end of the day, not that I have some projects, some irons in the fire, but, you know, to be able to put down a good article or a book or whatever, you know, an e-book or something, it's important to be able to write everything down and capitalize on what happened in the moment, because when you go back and think about it 3 months later and you want to sit down and write something down, there's details you forget about. So, I, you know, I'm keeping hoping to, at some point, or a short book or something, I'm looking to be able to put some of that out there, because it's indescribable the experience you get up at, you know, 12,500 to 13,500 feet on top of ridge lines, and there's nothing grows up there, you know. You're walking on rocks, and yeah, I mean, it's just to see the country from that perspective, it's awesome. So I'll hope to give you some more detail, Chuck, as things unfold.
Cool. I'll be looking forward to hearing about it.
So you made the right call then, sheep hunting versus train to hunt nationals this year.
I tell you what, man, I mean, like I said, I don't consider myself, you know, I consider myself fairly experienced in Western hunting. I wouldn't consider myself an expert, right? I don't call myself that, just because I still make mistakes every time I go out. But I've hunted a lot of animals, and I've been on hunts where other guys are hunting, or I'm hunting. So I've been on a lot of hunts, and there's nothing as challenging I've experienced as this, from the physical perspective to, you know, carrying your weight on your back, your pack, your tent, your bivy, whatever you're taking up. You got your bow. You know, I went in about 57 pounds with no water. So I had my that was 7 days of food, all my, you know, my sleeping bag, my gear. And once you load up with water, you're, you know, 65, 68 pounds. And we're hiking these cliffs, and, you know, I can't tell you how many thousands of feet of elevation gain and loss we had in the 5 days we were up there. But it's the hardest hunt from that perspective to getting into shooting range on in their terrain to even spotting them. I mean, at first, you know, Aaron Snyder, who was one of the friends of mine that went with us, he spotted the first couple groups of sheep. And Braden and I, we're looking through our binoculars, and he's telling us right where they're at, and we're not seeing anything. You know, and he's like, they're right, you know, check this out, look there. And then you look, and he says, no. And he says, look, you know, when you're, if you're at this point, we'll look at the top third of this. Oh, okay. But, and he picked them up so quick that there was times where you think about it, like, is this guy have some kind of sixth sense with sheep or something? Because we come over this ridge, and he sat down. I was right behind him, and I hadn't even sat down. And he's telling me, don't move. They're right there. And I'm thinking they're 50, 100 yards away. Well, they're 600, 700 yards away down this ridge. And, you know, he's telling me, he says, you know, they'll see you move. They got really good eyesight. And it took me a while to find them. And he just picked them up like, you know, like an expert deer or elk hunter, somebody that spends a lot of time with their specific game they chase. Aaron's to that point with sheep. And just learning from somebody like him who's done it, and but like I said, just finding them, getting into position. You're talking about extreme angled shots, further distance shots. So it's the most difficult hunt I've been on. And I tell you what, I'm hooked, man. I mean, I love the elk hunt, but things might get expensive for me in the future with sheep hunting. So.
Well, it's good to have a guy like that handy.
Oh, yeah, and he's, you know, and Braden, like I said, I can't say enough good things about those guys to come with me, because I think Braden said he lost like 7.5 or 8 pounds, you know, and this coming from a guy who's not a big guy. I mean, Braden's a very fit guy, but he's your 5'8", 5'9", you know, I would say probably a 175 variety. So for him to lose, you know, 7-8 pounds on a five-day hunt, And that just goes to show you how demanding it is, that, you know, with the hiking and everything, and Aaron to take off of work. And it was, I just can't say enough good things about those guys that come up and help me and spend that time up there with me with, you know, they don't have a tag. They're just going to try to help me fill mine. But, yeah, definitely quality company.
That's awesome.
So Will, what was the scenery like up in your net where you were at here a week ago or so?
Oh, man. So for those who don't know, I just got back recently from my honeymoon in Kauai, which is an island in the Hawaiian chain of islands there. And it's just a beautiful, really amazing place. They filmed a lot of Jurassic Park there. They had the waterfalls there that was in it, which is amazing. Did a lot of hiking. Went to Waimea Canyons, which they call like the Grand Canyons of the Pacific. Saw that. One of the most just eye-opening, amazing experiences of my life when I went to this food cart and had the world's greatest hot dog. Yeah, it took me to just another level. It was almost like touching God's fingers. That's
a pretty damn good hot dog, bro.
I'm telling you, this hot dog, right? So I'm a fan of pineapple to begin with, and you know the Hawaiians are as well. So I felt like we were bonding over our connection and love for pineapple. And this guy, he's a young guy, probably you know, young early 30s, late 20s, is running this hot dog food cart. And I'm thinking, you know what? I don't feel like getting, you know, the traditional Hawaiian fare today. I'm going for a hot dog. And so I go up, and I go to the food cart, and he's like, "What do you want?" I'm like, "What do you got?" He goes, let me tell you what you want." I'm like, "All right." He goes, "It's going to be a hot dog with in it, I have had them put in chunks of pineapple, right? And then on top of it is just shredded pulled pork, but it's a little bit different. It's like the Hawaiian take on this shredded pork. And then on top of that was barbecue sauce."
Shut up and take my money.
Right? That's all I could do. I had two. I first had one, and then I was going to split it with Melanie, but instead I gave her one bite and went back and got myself another.
Damn, that does actually sound pretty good.
Dude, I'm telling you, like, I would, if anyone has ever thought or considered going to Kauai, I would highly recommend it.
Not just the
hot dog. I had a pineapple smoothie. I was drinking out of coconuts. You know, there's amazing sushi, amazing fish, great scenery, great people. Everybody's really nice there. And they're big fans of hunting.
Right. I've seen TV shows where they go out there and they kill all sorts of crazy stuff that's been
pigs, some kind of deer they've got out there. And, you know, right now I don't think on the pigs there's a season or a limit.
Yeah, I hear they have a pig problem kind of like they do in the South here in the U.S.
Yeah.
Like they just want them gone.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, so that was kind of cool. On the way up to, like, the canyon, you'd see these different hunting checking stations or different, fish checking way in whatever stations. And this was pretty cool. You know, now that the more I get, I guess, into the hunting community and culture, the more I notice these things.
Should have taken your bow.
I know. In hindsight, I should have taken my bow and my fly rod. But Melanie kind of, even at the mention of the fly rod, that was getting shut down pretty quick. She said on any other trip, not the honeymoon.
So did you go check out a luau?
You know what? I didn't.
You didn't check out a luau?
No, and here's
why. Shame on you, Will.
I know. People recommended all this great stuff when all we did was hike and eat and drink on the beach.
Well, that's all right. As long as you got to experience the country. But it's been a long time. It's been probably 16, 17 years since I went to Hawaii. Actually, my cousin Jesse got married there. I was in his wedding there. I think we were 19 or 20. But long story short, went to a luau. And I was just curious if they pulled you up on stage to dance with them or anything. I was going to want to get some play-by-play on that.
But, I can dance, first of all, so that wouldn't have been a problem. They would have stood back and like, see what he does, follow his lead.
I'm going to have to see that with my own eyes, Will. I'm not saying I don't believe you, but I'm going to have to see that with my own eyes.
Oh, no, I'll say it. I don't believe him.
I used to take salsa dancing lessons.
Really?
Yeah.
Salsa dancing.
That was something I did during one of these before I had a lady. Figured I might learn to dance, help my chances a little bit. So
there you go.
One long winter night, you know, I went and signed up and kept going back, me and a couple buddies.
Did it help?
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, you get a girl who can follow and I'll lead.
That's cool. That's good to hear, Mr. Will.
Thank you. Yeah, I know.
All right.
You speak Spanish, I dance. Yeah. Show's got it all.
There you go.
I have no hidden secret talents.
No hidden talents, Jack?
No.
All your talents are on the surface.
They're pretty much out there. No.
So tell us, Chuck. You just got done with what was it, the world,
Nationals,
the
right?
NFA outdoor, field championship? Was that
NFAA Outdoor Nationals? Yeah, field championships in Pennsylvania.
How'd it go?
Went
how
great.
Did that go?
I thought it went really well. I probably could have shot better on the first day, but I had a great weekend and went out with we camped right there at the location. Me and my buddy John Scott, and he shot really well. He finished in the money for the first time ever. He was ecstatic. Amazing weather, and that club down in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, just puts on just the most amazing location for an event. The lanes, I don't know if you're all that familiar with field archery, but you know, it's 28 targets and it's basically a walking path through the woods, and the targets range from 20 feet out to about 80 yards depending on the game that you're shooting, and these are just amazing mowed paths with beautiful backstops. You can shoot four people across, or you know, like what they call four wide. I mean, it's like walking through a state park. They do just a superb job every year, and so we had a great time and the weather was awesome. And a big surprise winner in the men's pro division, Kendall Woody beat out Jesse Broadwater in a shoot-off. And understand that Jesse won that tournament seven times in a row and then lost to a guy in in Washington, in Darrington, when they went out there. And this is Jesse's second loss. And, you know, it's so uncommon for him to not win this event. And we were all super excited for Kendall. He's one of the homies, and, for him to win, I mean, it's something he's been trying to do for 30 years. It was very emotional for everybody. It was really cool.
Yeah, that, Jesse, he's effortless, I guess, is one word that comes to mind when you talk about Jesse Broadwater shoot. And he just got it figured out, man. So for somebody like, you know, I know a lot of the names in the target side of archery, and I've not got to shoot with very many of them. But the few times that I've been able to be at a tournament or see some of those guys shoot, I mean, it's a work of art, really, just to watch those guys shoot a bow. I mean, it
really is. Dave Cousins was in the mix too all weekend, and you know, Dave Cousins is easily, you know, him and Jesse are the two dominant men in our lifetime in field archery. I mean, Dave Cousins owns probably more world records than anybody I can think of. And if Jesse isn't right there with him or just behind him or just in front of him, you know, it's those guys have won those events just time after time after time. I mean, it's, you know, it's like picking the fight, you know, this past week with Rousey. You know, really, who do you think's going to win that? Yeah, it's pretty much going to go one way. You know, it's like looking at, when you look at Jesse and Dave, it's a coin flip. Okay, one of those guys is going to win it. So when Kendall, who's a guy who has a day job, can compete and hold his own with those guys, I mean, he spent the last 30 years trying to win that thing. But this past season, this past spring and summer, he's just really focused on that one event. That's it. He just put his time in and he pulled it out.
Yeah, and that, you know, there's a lot of things have to align for that kind of stuff to happen and win one of those big events against the best shooters in the world, because, you know, your setup has to be perfect. you know, you should, because there's times, and you can probably speak to this, Chuck, there's times where you feel like you're doing everything you can shooting wise, but you're just not grouping or hitting the spot like you think you should, you know.
Yep.
Something's not quite right, and it may be something as simple as a knock, a specific knock with the, you know, diameter size on your serving, or something that's just not letting that arrow come off clean, or a number of different things. But when everything is hitting perfect, and the stars align and everything comes together, and good things happen, and that's cool to see that. And I mean, you don't want to root against anybody, you know, Dave or Jess or anything like that. But to see somebody else come up that's been working hard for a long time and get on the podium, if you will, for that's cool to see.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a 3-day shoot too, you know, so everything has to go well for 3 days.
Yeah,
and it was really cool, you know, to Kendall, you know, I went up and I gave him a hug after the shoot off, and he was, you know how you get those shakes when you kill like a monster deer, big bear, you know, you just killed a trophy and your body is just trembling.
Yep.
You know, Kendall's this big bulldog of a man, and I gave him a big hug and his whole body was vibrating. I was like, dude. He's like, yeah. He goes, I feel like I just shot a big bear. I was like, yeah, you did. It was really cool. I was super happy for him. Really cool.
So, you know, Will, what do you got on your chest there?
Well, thank you for asking, Phil. When you hunt, do you walk around with your binoculars in your hand, Phil?
I do not.
How about you, Chuck? Do you sit there, walk around with your binoculars in your hand the whole time?
I'm from the East Coast. We don't walk. We good. We walk to the tree, climb in it, and sit.
And where do your binoculars go while you're sitting there?
Typically, mine will – I hang a pack right next to me in the tree. I have a hook right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll kind of unzip the pack, and I'll just set my binoculars so I can reach over and grab them.
That sounds a little inconvenient.
Well, you know, I do have one of the chest holders from Loophold that holds my binoculars on my chest, but it also makes me look like I have moobs. So,
for those who don't know, that would be man boobs or titties.
Yes.
Some circles.
Yes. So I tend not to wear that all that often, just because it's awkward.
Well, Chuck, problem solved for you. You should check out Alaska Guide Creations and their bino harness. They, or at least according to them, and I don't know if anyone's ever disputed this, were the originators of the bino harness pack, which I'm currently wearing. I know you can't see because you don't have the video turned on your Skype, but I know Phil can see it, and anyone watching this video has been seeing me wear it this whole time. This particular pack I'm wearing, though, Phil, it's a prototype. Not yet into production, will be in production in the tan. It's made of, I think they're calling this like the ballistic material, ballistic foliage green something. It's a much more strong, durable material that they'll be coming out with for a new series, new line. And that is, boom, first time that's ever been talked about outside of probably Alaska Guide Creations and some close friends of theirs. So we're dropping that on you guys today. The brand new line coming from them. I know, Phil, you wore one of their packs on your goat hunt. How was it?
Yeah, no, they're money. I mean, I know Aaron's been using them for a while, and the biggest thing that I'd say is it's built. They're built very, very, very well, and they completely they protect your binoculars completely. So we were in rain and hail, you know, numerous times up there, and you know that lid that goes over the top of the binoculars, it completely goes over and protects the top and the side. So it's not like you can, you know, on some of the other ones, the front of the binoculars or the dial is exposed, Some of them off the side of the lid. You can still get dirt and other stuff in there, dirt or water. And they're just built very well. And I'm impressed, man. I'm sold. I definitely think it's the best vinyl harness I've used ever.
Well, that was going to be, you know, the question that I had, because, I mean, I wouldn't mind wearing one, but the one that I have isn't like a protect or capture, or, you know, it's not really, your binoculars aren't tucked away. They're on your chest, but they're fully exposed. And the few times that I have worn them like that, it's just kind of annoying because they get water and dust and dirt and crap on them. And, you know, it's, now you got to clean them before you use them every time.
Which,
yep. So,
this is the purpose, right? Why put them in a pack if they're going to get banged up and shit?
Well, yeah, or on your chest. I mean, that's why they wind up in my pack, so that I can, you know, they're covered. You know, they're out of the way. They're not getting foggy or rained on or any of that other crap. Because we hunt in the snow and the rain and everything here, but, you know, I, having them on my chest, if they're not covered up or not protected, is worthless to me.
In upstate New York, you're mostly in crappy weather. Even when you go to a 3D shoot, you don't want your binoculars, or, you know, field shoot, wherever you're going, you know, to do some target shooting. You don't want your binoculars out and exposed.
Yeah, so this one that you have, it's all nice and protected.
And Chuck, you can't see it. And for those not watching the video, I'll give you a little run through play by play. It's got a nice little front pocket here, which I've got the Leupold RX 1000 TBR. Packed into, so you can put your rangefinder in the front. That's one of the fine features, is that nice big front pocket. Then you go to the main pocket up and behind that. That's got like a, I guess, I don't know what you call this. It's got like the elastic, not elastic, but like a stretchy cord that does yeah. Holds the lid down, which is nice. You don't have to unzip anything to get them out. You know, nobody hears it coming out. And then it's got a full pocket to fit your binoculars into. And then on top of that, this is something I really like, Phil. And I don't know what you put. I don't know if yours has. Does yours have this top, like, slotted area here?
Yeah, that's where I have my cut charts.
You have your cut charts in here? All right, so yep. Phil's got his cut charts in here. I don't have cut charts. And I just wanted to put stuff in there because I feel like, all right, if they're giving me pockets, I'm filling these pockets. Mm-hmm. So what I've got stored in here, little knife you see there. I've got my little tactical flashlight. Fits yeah. right in. And then, most importantly, my victory cigar for when there is an animal down. I will be smoking this cigar, and it will stay in the pack until that day comes. So that's what I'm storing in mine. You know, they've also got these nice side pockets, which I actually don't have anything in yet because I couldn't figure out anything to put in them yet. But I guarantee at some point there will be something in there. I'll probably put actually something in there that I can clean, or, you know, in one of them, I'll probably put one of those little claws to clean it just in case they do get a little dirty or banged up. And the other one, I'll probably put matches, actually, now that I think about it. I got to light this cigar somehow.
Jesus, has anybody told you you're a hoarder?
Yeah, I actually, that's one of Melanie's, you know, inside of my truck.
Jesus. So this thing sounds, I mean,
here's the thing. It sounds long, though. I got to have stuff to keep myself entertained.
Yeah, we'll just give you a little shiny something and set you in the corner, and you'll be over there looking at the shiny disc and petting felt for a while.
Well, here's the thing. You get out there, right? You're feeling a little low. You're feeling like, man, I've been out here all season. Is this going to be worth it? You look down at your Alaskan Guide Creations Bino Harness Pack, and what do you see? Your victory cigar. And now you feel re-energized, like sooner or later, I'm going to get to smoke that motherfucker. So I'm going to keep pushing, keep going, keep sitting my ass here until something walks out.
Or I'm a failure. I can't believe I haven't had a chance to smoke this cigar all season. I suck at this.
Never comes into the mind, Chuck. No failing, never ever.
So this thing sounds more like a fanny pack for your chest than a bino harness.
Yeah, you know, it could be, you know, Hulk Hogan, famous fanny pack wearer. Obviously, you know, fanny packs are for manly men, much like this bino pack harness.
I mean, is it trimmed out nice? I mean, it looks good. It sounds big and bulky. Is it?
No, you. Is, I don't know. I guess, Phil, you posted some pictures with it, right? Let me put it this way. When I have this on, I feel more manly than before.
Do you feel – so it's helping.
Oh, confidence level through the roof.
No, I forget about confidence. I mean, is it worth carrying into the woods?
Well, you can ask my main man, Phil, who carried it on his goat hunt this entire past week.
Yeah.
So it's totally worth it, right, Phil?
Yes, 100%.
Well, what did you have before? I was talking to you about it, and you were like, man, this thing blows my old harness out of the water.
So I had a I think it's FHF gear, which I hunted with that for the last 2 or 3 years, and even that up to whatever I'd used prior to was so much better. So going from what I felt the FHF gear is a good bino harness, it really is, to this Alaska Guide Creations bino harness, it protects from the sides, the top, it protects the bino so much better, it looked good. Here's the deal, right? You think about it.
Hold on one second, guys.
Sounds like Chuck's about to lay down the law somewhere.
Well, I'm camping here at the state park, and there's a little girl like 50 yards from me. Looks like she's about 2, 3 years old, just big enough to really walk around, and she started climbing a 10 speed.
Lovely.
That's good. Get them in there young. Get them, you know, riding those bicycles. Learn
yeah,
the experience.
It had, if I didn't whistle, it had busted lip written all over it. So I was just
preventing tragedy. Chuck, there's your superpower.
I am a hero. I am a man of the people.
Chuck, spot danger from miles away. Whistle.
Dun, dun, dun. So this thing was blowing your old pack right out of the water then.
Well, yeah, it's just like I said, from, you know, on the you think about it, you know, how much money can you potentially spend on a pair of binoculars? You know, I have now a pair of Swarovskis that were used when I bought them. But still, you talk about something that somebody might pay $500, $700, $1,200, $1,500 for a pair of binoculars.
Yeah, and all day.
And then you know, there's guys using a $40 bino harness to secure your potentially $1,000 or $1,500 investment on your chest, right?
More than that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean the binoculars I have now, I think were like $2,000 retail. I didn't pay that for them, but it's still. I mean, if you think about it, and man, I mean,
well, you want to protect $2,000 with $40 doesn't seem like a sound investment.
No, and like I said, that FHF bino harness is a good harness. It just there's some holes in there of which my binos were always dirty because of the dust and everything else. So as far as do they protect them from the water? Yeah, I mean, they have a nice lid over the top and they're, you know, pretty well built. But as far as like on the sides, you still can get dirt and quite a few things in on the sides. So it's one of those deals that I've had good. I believe the FHF harness is good, but this is just better. I mean, it's just all around better. So –
Now, and not only that, it's these other bonus pockets, like being able to store your rangefinder.
Picture of your new wife, maybe?
Right. Keepsakes, whatever you got. You know, but have that rangefinder and your binoculars now within range that also, and you're going to think of this maybe, I think us Eastern hunters may think about this a little more than your Western hunters, is when you want to keep your movements extremely minimal, you know, just to have it there on your chest, that's about the closest point you can get, you know, between the hands at, you know, your full distance, right? If you cut the distance between your hands and your face, you're going to find your chest somewhere in there, right? So now you get minimal movement to reach probably, to other than your bow or your rifle, the two most important tools you brought along with you.
Yeah. I certainly like the idea of having my rangefinder right there next to my binoculars. Because 9 times out of 10, you know, that's the first thing you're going to reach for, is you're going to pop off a couple of spots just to give you a rough idea of where things are, you know, you're going to have two or three marks in your head. But when you see a deer come out, you know, you're going to pop them a couple of times. And a lot of times, you know, Will, you know this, when you're back east here, you might not need your binoculars, but you damn sure need your rangefinder, at least to give you a couple of quick marks.
Oh.
And we're hunting deer, and you're right on top of them. You're not reaching into a side pocket or off of a hook for your rangefinder. I mean, it's got to be right there.
Yeah, I've had rangefinders because I've tried to set them. Say I've had a two stands, you know, set up one on the top in case somebody else is coming in to sit or to film, right? I'll set them there, you know, on like the foot of the other stand, and I'll sit in the lower stand. Well, I can't tell you how many times I've knocked them off there on accident, or, you know, felt like I've had to go at, you know, the slowest possible pace to reach over there, and it feels like the longest reach ever. You know, and I also use my binoculars because I'll hunt on like soybean or corn, and you know, a lot of times it's just to keep the boredom away. I'll be looking at, you know, the other end of the wood line to see what's going on.
Yeah, I've totally done that. I mean, you're always peering into the edge of the woods to see what's moving back there, you know, because there's a lot of times you'll pick something off at a couple of hundred yards, and you're like, okay, they're finally coming. You know, it's 5:30. They're going to be here in a half an hour. Let's see if they're popping out of the wood line yet. Yep, there they are. Okay. And then, you know, I use the binoculars more or less to identify the deer that I'm used to seeing on camera and things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, having that sounds like a really cool product, actually. Because the only ones I've ever seen before really are just binocular protectors. They're just kind of a little pouch that holds nothing but your binoculars. You can't put anything else in there. And I've never really thought those were worthwhile. So it sounds like something I need to be looking at for this fall.
I would recommend checking them out. We're going to have them on the show at some point, I know. And they're really cool guys to talk to, down to earth. And, you know.
What are they called? Alaskan what?
Alaskan Guide Creations. Brock Akers turned me on to these guys a couple years ago because I saw his bino harness he had bought from him, and I was like, ooh, that is nice. Where did that come from? And so that's how that actually got started. And he put me in contact with them, and, you know, Phil and I are both going to be wearing them throughout our whole season this season. Pretty stoked about that.
Sweet.
Yeah. You know what else I like?
Short stacks of 20s.
Well, other than that, I like big scoops of protein. And you know where Chuck Cooley gets his protein from? Mountain Ops. That's right, bitches. Chuck Cooley is a Mountain Ops. What is it, operative? Is that what you're going by, Chuck?
Yeah, I think that's what they call us.
You should really be superhero. Chuck Cooley, Mountain Ops superhero. Superman. This lovely podcast is brought to your ears by Mountain Ops, makers of great, amazing supplements. They also, actually, the one thing they probably do better than supplements is podcast guests. If you go back to, I think it's like our second or third podcast, you will hear Jordan and Casey from Mountain Ops on the program, and they were awesome, in my opinion.
Those guys are a riot.
They are. They're funny guys, down-to-earth guys, making great products out there, supplements. If you need supplements, go check out their website. And if you enter the code, Phil, do you know the code?
Does it have something to do with Natural Born Hunter and NBH20?
Oh, boom. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. NBH20. Which does
for the win
for Natural Born Hunter. That's right, Chuck. Even you. If they're not giving you a discount already, which they should be because of all the amazing things you do with your products, they should be giving you a discount. But if they are not, you can go and put in NBH20 at your checkout and get 20% off your Mountain Ops purchase.
I got to tell you, those guys are so good to me. They, as an operative, you know, I have a certain program, plus anything extra I need, I can get at a deal. And I've turned so many people onto that program that are just, they're just really excited. And not all of them are hunters and outdoorsmen and archers and things like that. They're just regular people who are looking to, you know, feel better and feel more fit and lose some weight. And it's really cool to see people from,
you know, every walk of life, just doing better on that program. And they've done a great job by me. You know, they treat me really, really, really good.
I really don't need to do a commercial to talk them up, you know, or blow smoke up anyone's ass about, you know, Mountain Ops and the products they make. I've got Tuck here who has actual evidence that using them, eating a little bit better, has dramatically changed his life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's totally no BS, man. I mean, we did the program just the way, you know, just kind of winged it, really. I didn't even have a true program in place. I was just doing the sit-ups. Wasn't going to the gym, and, you know, the doctor's tests just completely backed it up. And, you know, when you can do a study like that and pull the blood out of your system and test it, and it doesn't lie, man. Numbers don't lie. So, I mean, people can say, well, it's this, it's that, it's the other thing. Whatever. It fucking works, dude.
That's you know, if it doesn't work, I'm sure they'd be out of business by now. And two, we wouldn't have them as a advertiser on the show, and Chuck would not be sitting here saying all this stuff. And
right,
like you said, he went, been tested, been proven. So, you know, if you're interested and so inclined to do so, head on over to the website, check them out, enter the code NBH20, and you'll get what, Phil?
20% off.
20% off. That takes your order from $100 to $80. Then you can still order $100 worth of stuff, you know, get yourself a hat or something, and just feel like, ooh, this hat's free.
Yeah, you know, I think they do all sorts of free shipping. If you get a little bit, if you go over a certain dollar amount, they do free shipping, and they're always having deals on gear. And their website is getmountainops.com.
There you go, getmountainops.com. NBH20, two things you need to remember.
Jeez, you write it down.
There you go. And another reason we had Chuck on the show is Chuck and I have been talking, and Chuck has some goals. And they're goals that I think a lot of people in the hunting and, you know, bow hunting community have. And one of them is get in better shape. Another is to do a train to hunt competition this coming up. You know, it'll be the 2016 train to hunt season and he has a big final goal. And what is that final goal, Chuck?
I want to go out west I want to do an elk hunt with you guys, like a DIY public land pack in bow hunt for elk, pack out, pick a state and go.
Which I think, you know, we're going to be chronicling that throughout the next year. Chuck's going to be going for it. We're going to be getting him set up to get in shape. You'll be seeing the journey a little bit along the way. Chuck will be coming back and checking in. And where would you say you are now fitness-wise, Chuck?
It was funny because Phil mentioned it earlier. You know, I'm like that 5'8 guy that, you know, and I was like, whoa, easy there, pal. You're right in my sweet spot. So, you know, I'm 5'8". I'm at 200 pounds, you know, a little less, a little more, depending on the weekend. You know, not a fat slob, but not weak and not completely out of shape. But if somebody said run 100 yards, I could do it, but that would be the last damn thing I did that day.
So you will be seeing Chuck go from 100 yards will kill him to what will hopefully be by next September, heading to Colorado for a hunt with myself, and I know Phil has graciously volunteered to join us on this adventure, to be a lean, mean elk hunting machine.
Yeah, you know, that's – I don't want to be like this marathon runner kind of guy, and I don't want to be the next – you know, Mr. Olympia, but if I could be fit and trim and able to take care of yourself, and if somebody said, let's go hunting, you can go, and it doesn't kill you to drag a deer or drag an elk or hike up a mountain, then, dude, then shouldn't that be everybody's goal?
I mean, nobody wants to die on the mountain. You want to kill something on the mountain.
And not have it be you.
Yeah. If there's something dying on the mountain, you know, you're hoping it's an elk or a deer or a goat, not yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to be that guy that's like, I'll catch up. Yeah, no, man.
You never do. You know that, right, Chuck? The guy who says catch up never sits there. He sits down.
Yeah, you know, where the guy, you know, I'd love to go on a hunt like this year, right? But I would just feel guilty as hell because the guide would look at me and like, really? Really? What are you going to – there's no four-wheelers here, bro. We're not driving to the top. Yeah.
You tie it
you have to hike up there. Yeah. Yeah. Cool, I shot it. Can you cut it up and drag it down for me? Yeah, probably not.
So that's the plan. That is something we'll be working on with Chuck. If anyone else is interested in doing a similar thing, you know, and we come up with any tips or tricks to help you along the way, we'd be more than happy to talk with you about it. Also, another reason we had Chuck on is some big news in your personal life, Chuck. Also in the archery community, you have sold Feather Vision.
Yeah, yeah. For those who don't know, Feather Vision, we are the OEM supplier, the original equipment manufacturer supplier for 13 different scope companies around the world.
What are some names, big names on those?
Shibuya, CR, HHA's our biggest customer. Spot Hog, everybody knows about Spot Hog. If you hunt out west, we make all their stuff. You know, those are just some of the big ones. Shibuya is really big in the target market. Shibuya made in Japan.
Is it Shibuya or Shibuya? I always thought it was like Shibuya, like Shibuya boy. It's Shibuya.
Shibuya.
It's Shibuya.
Yeah. Yeah. A little, you know, little less thug in there. It's a little.
I thought they were straight thugging. I was like, man, that's a pretty progressive name for the archery community.
You know, but that's a really high-end target site, and you know, they're actually buying product from us and shipping it into Japan. It's that good. So, you know, our business, we founded our business 19 years ago, and my dad's been running it more or less full time for the last few years. I own an eyeglass store. I'm an optician on a day-to-day basis, and I used to run Feather Vision full time, and then an opportunity came for the store, so I went that direction, and my father's been running the business. But he's 67, you know, it's time to get him retired, and, you know, it wasn't a situation where I could run both. And as successful as Feather Vision is and as big as Feather Vision is, I knew it was limited with what I could do with it if I was running it. So, you know, we talked to a couple of friends, and we wound up with a partnership with AAE. And AAE is an amazing company. It's a family-owned business. They've been around for generations. And to get hooked up with a group of people like that, where it's the grandfather, father, son, wife, everybody there understands and believes the family practice, you know, where your product is your name, and it's important to put out, number one, really good products, but it's also really important to have amazing customer service because your company is your name. You know, it's not like you're working for McDonald's. It really means something. And so to get hooked up with them was a blessing. And we just announced the sale this week. It's something we've been working on for a while, and that'll pick back up here this coming week. Dad is doing some training of all their staff, and production really only stopped for about 6 days, and we'll be right back into full production.
Wow, that's awesome.
So are they gonna take over? I mean, I guess I'm not sure with the manufacturing of your that product, is, I mean, other than them taking that over, because they're, I mean, obviously in a different state, but is it mainly just kind of shipping and distribution at that point?
Yeah, they're actually going to be doing everything. They're going to be doing the fabrication, the shipping, the distribution, the whole nine yards. So, you know, that's part of the training is to make sure that we get all their people up to speed on how to answer questions, what questions to answer, things like that, but also spend a lot of time with their production people. So they have a dedicated team of people that's going to be handling this operation. It's not just going to be, you know, high mass volume. It's going to be the same group of people every single day working it just like we were. But you got to get them trained and how to do things. And we've been working on that. Training is something that we've been working on over here for quite a period of time. And so now it's just a matter of putting the final polishing touches on it. And I think it'll be great. I'm going to remain heavily involved with the operation. I'm not going anywhere. Part of the deal was they really wanted me to stay on as a consultant and technical provider and things like that. So you'll still see me at all the tournaments representing Feather Vision and promoting Feather Vision and working for Feather Vision. It's really just under a bigger banner now. My role doesn't change a great deal. I'll still be involved in all the technical aspects of it. And like I say, you'll still see me out on the road. I'll be there for all the major tournaments.
Very cool, Chuck.
Yeah, it's super exciting. Super exciting. I'm really, you know, there's going to be some big things coming. We've got some ideas for some new products. And like I say, you know, a company like AAE with all their resources and things they do behind the scenes, you're going to see some really, really cool products coming out in the next 12, 24 months.
Yeah, man, a company like that can really help you get places.
Yeah, it'll change the game. It's really cool. Really cool. We're super stoked. Super stoked.
I got a question for the two of you, right? And Chuck, you can answer this first. When would hunting season start for you? Is it, you know, like it's all year round, you're always planning for it, you're always getting ready for it. You know, does it include stuff you do around hunting camp, you know, even shutting down hunting camp or whatever, all the stuff you get, you know, gassing up, everything, does that include it all? Or for you, is hunting season just the minute you start hunting? And it ends when you're done hunting?
Yeah, for me, it's more like this second half, and that's because I do so much tournament archery. So, like, I should have put cameras out earlier this year, and I didn't. So in the next couple of weeks, I'll throw some cameras out and see what I've got. But I'm also going to hunt the same land that I've been hunting for the last 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't change a hell of a lot.
Would you consider, you know, that like hunting season, though, like hunting preseason, or is that just all separate to you?
No, hunting season for me is the very first official day I can actually lace up on the ground. Other than that, it's just scouting in preseason. So, you know, I'll kind of get some stuff ready, hang some cameras, double check my gear, make sure there's nothing I really need to get, and, you know, go through, double check all the tree stands, make sure they're all good, make sure everything's got new straps on it so that, you know, we're not falling to our death, making sure that the limbs are all cleared, and that's about it, you know, so I'm ready to kill stuff in about 2 weeks, you know, and that's just working a couple of weekends, you know. So for me, hunting season is, it's just another season. It's like indoor season or outdoor season or field season or 3D season. It's, for me, it's just another season.
So it's all part of your shooting season, really.
Just all runs together, yeah.
I got so. See, I would consider that all one really long season.
Yeah, my season never ends. It's just a different bow. So, you know, when killing season comes around, when it comes time to start putting stuff in the freezer, you know, I'll grab my hunting bow. I'll spend a day making sure it's sighted in and making sure it's all tuned and ready to go. And that's really all I need. Because it's all the same shooting form, right? I've been shooting hundreds of arrows a week for a year. Okay, great. So now it's a different bow. It's a different arrow. It's a different sight. Okay, great. Done. Sighted in. Let's go kill something. And then it's generally, you know, this is the awful way to look at it. It's, all right, let's fill our tags. Let's just lay some shit down and get it done because I got indoor season to get ready for. So I don't want to be in a tree in December because I got shit to do, man. I got tournaments coming up. So I need to get my tags filled early and well. So for me, archery season's the big go. Spend a lot of time in the trees. Go out with my kids. Have a great time. Gun season, two or three times go out in case we don't have a tag filled. And that's pretty much it. There is no late season. I never go late season hunting because I just don't have time.
And how about you, Phil? What do you consider your season to be or the different seasons?
You know, I guess I'm kind of like I'm with Chuck on this one. This last year and a half has been a little bit different because I spent, I don't know, 7 years, I think, traveling the ASA circuit, and it was very much that of, you know, ASA at that point started the first week in February, and that for this year is the first year I think they bumped it back a little bit. So it was, you know, middle of December when people are kind of gearing up for indoor season, I was already getting ready for 3D season. And my season started, like I said, February. We ran all the way through the first week in August. And then my hunting season started 2 weeks later with antelope. I'd run antelope and then elk and deer into September. Been doing a little bit of whitetail hunting in early November. And then it was like a two-week layover. And then it's back to getting your 3D bow set up, you know. I'd shoot a little bit of paper indoors just when the weather was bad, just keep shooting some arrows. But I wouldn't say that there's not a lot of time that I don't spend with the bow in my hand. You know, it differs as what I'm preparing for because, like Chuck said, I mean, when I was shooting the tournament circuit more, I was making it a point that I'd shoot between 75 and 100 arrows every day. And yep. I'd take one day off a week to where I wouldn't shoot that many arrows. Sometimes I'd still go out and just plug a few, you know, a few arrows at 10 yards or something just to keep the muscle memory up and keep shooting. But you're pounding, you're shooting a lot of arrows. So, you know, I guess to answer your question, it's a season within a season, maybe. You know what I mean? It's small seasons within one large season. And, you know, it brings up a topic that, you know, a lot of people I've heard in the past, they say, well, I'm a tournament shooter to help with my hunting. And I see two sides of that. I see the side that is, well, your shot execution, And you're basically your release and your shot execution, yeah, that probably helps you in your aiming. But other than that, I mean, unless you shoot a bow hunter setup all year, it's not the same to me because whether you're shooting a lens with a movable sight and single pin, whatever, I don't hunt like that. You know, I hunt with a multiple pin sight, no lens, and shorter stabilizer, and, you know, so it's a different setup, heavier draw weight. So to me, yeah, I think to some extent shooting tournament stuff is very beneficial just from the pressure and the shot execution repetition standpoint. But it's so different. You can speak to this, Chuck. I mean, your bow that you just shot for field, field championships last week, it's nothing like your hunting bow. I can almost guarantee it.
No, I mean I'm shooting a Hoyt Podium 37, so it's a 37-inch bow, and, you know, it's 55 pounds, and it's got stabilizers hanging all over it, and a, you know, big movable sight, and when I go to my hunting bow, it'll be a, you know, a Hoyt carbon turbo, you know, doesn't feel the same, doesn't shoot the same, doesn't hold the same, but I'll have a slider sight on there so that I can just have one pin to look at. Because I'm not the best multiple pin shooter because I don't look at them all year.
Yeah.
So I'm not bad with them, but I'm not as comfortable with them as I am with a single pin slider. So, you know, throw a single pin slider on there, get used to how that looks, and, you know, shoot for a couple of weeks practicing. But like you say, you know, the form is there, the shot memory is there, the muscle memory is there, the strength is there. It's all there. It's just a slightly different feel. And, you know, you get a couple hundred arrows through it and you're like, okay, yeah, I know what this feels like. And you're good to go. And then, you know, I'll spend a few weeks bow hunting and, you know, hopefully get to put a few down, and if not, okay, great, whatever. And then it's put that away and pick up the indoor bow and get right to it. Cause you know, like Phil said, you mean the indoor tournament season on the pro scale starts November, December. And yeah. then there's the ATA show in January, and then there's, you know, all the ASAs, and then Vegas and the Lancaster shoot, and then Louisville, and it just rolls right up on you. And forget the fact that you've got family holidays in there. You know, you've got Thanksgiving and Christmas and all this other stuff that you're going to take time off for, you know, you're just gonna. So you need to make, adjustments for that. So for me, no, I'm with Phil. It's like a little mini season within a season, one big long season that just never seems to end. But I know that there's a lot of guys that don't do that tournament trail and their hunting season is all year long. You know, they're food plotting, their cameras, their trail cutting, you know, they're just itching to get in the woods. And then it's every minute, every day, all day, they hunt really hard. And that's really cool. That's really awesome. I would love to have that kind of time and dedication to put into a hunting property. And it's just not realistic.
So you would both consider then it to, you know, the food plotting or your scouting to be part of your hunting season? You know, maybe your camp care or whatever.
Yeah, it's just one more thing on the list. I don't even know if I would call it a season. It's just, you know, like I rebuilt my target, but, you know, up at my range, that's just something that needed to be done. It's not part of my season, you know, or, you know, going to check the trail cameras or going to check the stands or going to check on camp. I don't look at it as part of the season. It's just one more thing that's got to be done before season.
Well, here's what I'm getting at. Is I've heard people say, you know, with train to hunt stuff or getting in shape for hunting you don't have to be fit to hunt deer. And you know what? That's true. However, being fit really helps you with all these things that pertain to your hunting season. You know, whether you're food plotting or scouting or, you know, anytime you have to pick up or carry the tree stands, set them up, all that, it's all easier when you are in shape.
Oh, absolutely.
So even though it may not be actually hunting, I'm putting it in the category of, you know, it's kind of that hunting season prep, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't get involved too much into the realm of the whitetail world. I mean, when I go whitetail hunt, I go to a guy that's got property and he's got his tree stands and stuff set up just because we're driving 4.5-5 hours to go to that camp, you know, and it's not like it's 20 minutes from home or 40 minutes from home. So it's a little further away from us, but I would agree that anything that's going to put the success in your favor, in the hunting realm. Yeah. That's part of the season. You know, it's got to be, whether it's from a physical fitness perspective, whether it's from a practicing and shooting perspective, or whether it's from a, you know, a food plot or a trail cam perspective. It's part of the game.
It's all encompassing.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm with Phil on that.
Recently, I was told by somebody, right, I will never have to pick up and carry logs for hunting, right? I shit you not. Today, I belong to a hunting camp, fishing camp. It's got like 600 acres, 30 members. It's, you know, one of these help days where everybody goes up and pitches in. I'm with these two other guys. One of them's 71 years old, and he's probably been cutting trees down since he was about 10 years old. Made of iron, tough as nails guy, right? It's me and this other young dude, and he's cutting them up, and we're carrying them. He's cutting these things about 8 to 10 foot long, limbing them, and we're just up on the backs and taking them about 50 yards, throwing them off this ravine, you know, into their brush pile. And I thought to myself, of course this would happen. Just not long after I'm told never will I ever have to carry logs for hunting, I am literally carrying logs at a hunting camp for hunting purposes.
See? That happened.
Yep. You know who that was, Phil?
Who's that?
Who told me they'd never be carrying logs for hunting season?
Who's that?
It was you.
I wouldn't be carrying logs for hunting season?
Yeah, you said. I remember when I brought up the strongman stuff, and you go, I'll never have to carry logs for hunting season.
That's because he
let me maybe elaborate on that.
This is a long way for me to get to this point.
I
God
wouldn't.
Damn, dude, you took the long way for this, didn't you?
Well, here's the deal, though, Will. Here's my deal. As far as carrying a log like a strongman competition, a little bit of...
Wow. Someone needs to check on Phil, see if he's alive.
I'm here. I think it's Will's. I think it's Will's audio.
What do you do? Touch a wire? That's what it sounds like on this end. It sounds like lightning.
There's a bumblebee in the line.
I guess. Is he gone? Did we lose him?
I think he's changing his headset.
What do we got there?
Changing his headset.
This all.
Damn, dude.
You with us, Will?
Shit.
Now I got this cool little delay.
Everyone hear me?
Kinda.
Yeah.
There we go. All right.
I got you.
I had to fix that.
Hey, I got Billy going on too now.
What's that?
Whoa. I got two Phils going on. Stereophonic Phil.
Is it Phil doing it?
I don't know, Phil, talk.
Phil?
I got
hey, how about now?
Yeah, there's two of you.
I don't hear two of them.
Oh, okay. I'm on a big delay. So when I speak, I can actually hear myself speak about a second later.
Yeah, I can do the same.
I'm not picking that up.
Okay.
As long as it's good on your end.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not recording it, I think we're good to go. I don't know.
So let me elaborate, Will, on the log carry.
Yeah, go ahead, Phil.
Jesus, dude.
Longest point it's ever taken me, mate.
If I'm going to be carrying a log, I can see carrying firewood. I can see moving a log to clear a road, throw some trees that are falling in the road. I can see all those things happening, right? As far as what you crazy son of bitches do in the strongman competitions, those aren't normal logs, man. Those are freaking trees that are carried with heavy equipment, okay? So maybe I wasn't clear on what I was talking about, but to some extent I would carry some kind of logs, but I'm not going to go out there and try to pick up the biggest log in the forest and see how far I can carry it for time. So maybe there was a little bit of that I was thinking about when I made that comment.
You know what? Fair enough. And one of the things I thought of today when we were cutting down trees, and I literally, one of the things I had to do was, we didn't have a ladder anyway to get up. We wanted to limb this tree because we couldn't cut these trees down because there's another cherry tree leaning against these two, I think they're hemlocks, and they had been underdug. So the root system on the back of this cherry was totally gone. And the only thing probably keeping it upright was these hemlocks it was leaning on. So what we ended up doing was having to limb a lot of it. And I had to climb up, and luckily they're about 3 foot apart from each other. And I put my feet up against the one tree and my back against the other, and I kind of did that kind of shimmy like you see on American Ninja Warrior up the tree.
Yep.
And then I had them hand me a running chainsaw. I had the brake on, though, and I popped it off, and I limbed them in that position. And I thought to myself, you never know what you will have to do in the realm of getting ready for a hunt or in any kind of work situation.
What the hell could go wrong with that?
Not
Will the spider monkey.
Jesus.
I'm doing it with a guy named Ike. Nothing can go wrong when you're with a guy named Ike.
Sure. Yeah, they'll just dig a hole, put you in it.
Damn right they will.
Will? Yeah, no, I haven't seen him all day. He didn't show up.
Showed up.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's one of those things where, you know, it just kind of, it's like these guys who say, you don't need this. It's like,
well,
motherfucker, you don't know. Not saying you, Phil. I was just busting your balls on that one.
But maybe, you know, like I think this came about when we were talking about the Train Hunt Nationals, when they had certain events that they did on this last one. Were we talking about that when I said that? That I wouldn't carry a log? Or was this before? I don't remember.
I think we were talking about carrying a log separately.
So, you know, the guys, one of the biggest comments I heard, one of the toughest parts of the weekend at last week's national event was the 80-pound get-ups, 15. You know, and I'm thinking about it, and don't get me wrong, Kenton's got every right to do whatever he wants in these competitions as far as making it as difficult as he can. I think the regionals are going to be pretty much on a apples-to-apples comparison considering terrain. But nationals, yeah, he wants to make sure that whoever he's crowning as the champion is deserving. And, you know, from what I heard, the two guys from Oregon that finished first and second, you know, Gabe came in third. Hats off to everybody finished on the podium in all the divisions, you know. From what I understand, it was a tough weekend. So congrats first and foremost to those guys. Going back to doing 80-pound get-ups, I don't think it's ever crossed my mind for anything in the woods or anything else to do to get up off the ground from a flat position on my back with 80 pounds without either rolling over or standing up and picking it up in a different manner. But, hey, you know.
You never know.
It's one of those things you never know. If somebody falls on top of you, you know.
Yeah, you got to figure that out.
You know, that's my thing is the whole, I was doing things today I never thought I'd be doing for danger reasons mostly, but you know, I was damn glad I was in shape.
I will defend the fat man. You know, you want to find an easy way to get something done. Find a fat, lazy bastard.
You'll find a shortcut that way.
You will not have to play spider monkey if you get an old fat man out there in the woods.
Why is that?
Because he will just look at shit until he finds a way to get it done without having to play spider monkey.
You're probably right. You know what the quote was, though, from the old 71-year-old guy when we were like, all right, so this is you're going to cut them at 10 foot? He looks at us and goes, a little bowl work makes things a lot faster sometimes.
Yeah. So, yeah, hey, right.
Right. You're right, man. You're tougher than we are.
There you go. Yeah, if he's 71 and he's out there running a saw, you better keep up.
Yeah, oh, man, I'm telling you, this guy, was, you know, they say working class hero, blue collar hero. This guy is one of my, I've known him for a long, long time. He's been a logger up there in the Southern Adirondacks for a long time, cut more trees down than just about anybody. And he knows his shit and he is tough as hell.
Got some work done here today.
Hell yeah.
Have you seen that kid on YouTube?
Yeah, the new Bane.
Yeah. We're going to cut some timber today.
Well, boys, I actually have to get running. I'm getting some texts right now saying it's dinner time and I need to get my ass home.
So home? Where are you?
Yeah, where are you, Will?
I'm in the office.
Oh, businessman.
Business. So I'm in the business place doing business things.
Do you have an office?
For the construction company, we do.
Right on.
Yep.
So let's recap here real quick. So we, Mountain Ops.
Mountain Ops, 20% off. If you want some amazing supplements and products, what you should do is go to getmountainops.com. And what should you do there, Chuck?
You are going to type in the code...
NBH 20,
and you're going to get 20% off your order for Natural Born Hunter at getmountainops.com.
Check out some of the new Raspberry Enduro. I must say that's quality.
Oh, you had a bunch this weekend, right?
I had a sample or two. Aaron had a bunch of it.
I heard you guys were living off it.
It's badass.
You know what? Yeah, I'll say that hydrating properly up there was very important, and that was definitely part of the supplementation. But so to recap, Mountain Ops.
Hey, real quick on the Mountain Ops before you break on that, have you tried their high altitude stuff?
No.
No.
I've not tried any altitude anything supplementation.
Phil just lives at high altitude.
Yeah, I when I've hunted in the past, I've gotten up fairly high a few times. This sheep hunt is the highest I've ever hunted, but I've never had any issues with altitude sickness or anything like that. So that's not something I was concerned about. But I have heard from some other people that have come from a little bit lower elevation that said that they've used some and it does help. So I can't I wouldn't lie about something like that. I can't speak on that. I've never used it, but
I used it this year a couple of times when I flew, and I found it to be really helpful.
Really, I didn't think about that. That does make sense.
Yeah, well, I'm at 700 feet. I mean, that's where we're at.
Flying.
Yeah, flying. You know, the cabins are pressurized at 10,000 feet, and. You know, man, I get sick as hell on planes. I get off a plane. I fly all day to the West Coast. I feel like crap. And I got to talking to the guys out there about it. And they said, look, man, try this Ascent. It's designed to help people, you know, cope with that above 7,000-8,000 feet, you know, kind of parameter. And give it a shot and see what you think. And so I did. I gave it a shot when I went to California, and man, I felt like $1,000,000. I got off the plane, and I felt so much better. It was really cool. But I wondered if anybody had tried it, you know, at higher elevations or for hunting applications, because I know that's what it's really designed for.
Well, right. If any of our listeners have, and they've got opinions on it, message us at the Natural Born Hunter Facebook page or at our Natural Born Hunter Instagram account.
I may have to still try that because, you know, I know what it's what I've felt like without it, so I may actually try some.
How'd you
just try it anyway, just to see if I feel any better, you know?
Yeah, it's called Ascent.
Yeah, worst case is a, you know, it's a placebo effect for me, but we'll see. You know, I don't mind trying it.
Yeah,
I trust those guys.
Yeah, I felt really good about it. So.
So all right. Mountain Ops, Chuck, Train to Hunt, elk hunting.
We're doing it.
We're going to have a good time.
Yes, sir.
We're doing it. Will's going to get me hooked up with a house here and get some working out programs in, get started with that. What kind of box did you call that, Will?
Shit, I forget.
For the type of
CrossFit gym?
CrossFit gym.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
We're gonna get Chuck started with CrossFit, so he has somebody kind of giving him some hands-on training. Then we'll be moving him into some train to hunt style workouts once he gets a base going, just so he knows movements when he sees them on the online programming.
Right. So I don't break myself.
Exactly. Exactly. Give him more of a gentle on-ramp, if you will.
There you go. That sounds good to me, man. I always enjoy good community for hunting and I'm looking forward to that. When Will brought it up, and I was pretty stoked to hear that. So,
yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Will. Well, if you got to run, we'll probably do the same.
All right, boys.
So, good catching up with you again, Chuck.
Yes, sir. Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it. And yeah, let's get together here in a couple of weeks and find out what's going on. There's a couple of big tournaments coming to a close here, and it'll be hunting season for everybody. We'll be moving logs, apparently.
If you're lucky. I'll send Ike out to give you some help.
Sweet. All right, man.
Cool.
Thanks for having me on, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. You all have a good night.
All right, Will. Later.
Later. Oh, this has been the Natural Born Hunter podcast. Wake up, chase dreams, repeat. I almost missed that one. NBH 20 for all your orders.
Nice.
Don't forget it. Later.